Welcome to World of Promise from CSL Behring and Seqirus, a podcast about biotechnology's promise to transform the lives of patients living with rare and serious diseases, and its promise to protect the health of people around the world.
Welcome to World of Promise. I'm your host, Anthony Farina. It really goes without saying that in today's world, digital technology is an incredibly important part of just about everything that we do. For one of the world's leading biotech companies, how does digital technology impact patients as well as plasma donors? And how will this technology be transformed in the next decade and even beyond? So that's among the topics I discussed today with Mark Hill, Chief Digital Information Officer for CSL, the world's third largest biotech. Mark started with the company in October, and prior to that, he has had more than three decades of experience working for a number of other biotech and pharma companies. So clearly, he has a great deal of insights on this topic. Now, here's my conversation. Hi, Mark. Thank you for joining me today. And look, we're really excited that you're part of the company leading the digital technology and transformation. You know, if you worked in this space for what, more than 30 years, holding leadership roles at a number of other biotech and pharma companies such as Gilead Sciences, Merck, and some others. So I think people will be really interested to get your perspective in. Over that time, I'm sure you've seen technology evolve very rapidly, along with the changes in biotech and biopharma as well. But maybe what are, you know, one or two of the key lessons you've learned about technology and change during your career?
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the question. The one thing that I've learned is that technology transformation doesn't happen in a big bang. It actually happens over time. Let me give you a few examples. When I started in this industry, when you think about submissions, you know, to regulatory affairs, we started off sending U-Haul trucks, you know, to the FDA with paper documents, number one, right? So that's not pretty transformational. And then we went from that to CDs, a few CDs, and we shipped them in the mail. You know, then we went from, you know, submitting documents through the wires. And now it's just magic, if you will. It arrives at the FDA, you know, through many means. But the transformation actually started with an idea over time. When I started my career in this industry, the way I interacted with others was via a pager alert if someone needed me straight away. And by today's standard, you know, that was so cryptic. So the first lesson also that I've learned that technology, as I said before, transformation is continuous. If you think about an iPhone, Anthony, many of you probably felt that the iPhone was transformational. And it was a phone. To me, it was a computer that you could take in, that you could put in your pocket. But going back to this concept of transformation happen over time, is the real transformation started to take place once the iPhone was delivered. So Uber does not exist today without the iPhone. So when you think about digital delivery, right? When you deliver these things, you should go out at the end of the year and look back and say, with all of these deliveries in aggregate, were they transformational? So that's how I tend to think about, you know, technology. And I've learned that most things are not transformational day one, but as you continue to stick with it, you know, they are. Now, that being said, in our industry, remember, we've got to get things right the first time. In the software industry, we can get it right with the second, third, and fourth release, right? And over time, you know, those things are transformational for people, companies, et cetera.
Interesting. So let's dig in a little bit into your background, Mark. You grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. You were the middle of seven children, which I'm sure was really interesting. You know, so what was that like? And, you know, how did that impact how you engage with people even today?
So being in the middle of seven kids, you can imagine that's like a fun zoo because, number one, we're all very close. Whether we wanted to be close or not, my mother would have it no other way, number one, right? So, but also, let me back up. I remember, I'll never forget this. I was working, and I'll get back to the childhood, but I used to call my mother when I lived in Memphis, Tennessee, every Friday at 10 o'clock. All of a sudden, one Friday, I didn't call. And so she calls me. She said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Nothing." She said, "Something's wrong." I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "No, mother, nothing wrong." I said, "Are you okay?" She said, "Yes." She said, "It's 11:30. And, you know, you didn't call me at 10 o'clock. And what I realized is that I had set the expectations, you know, of calling her at 10. That being said, as kids growing up, one of the things that we were taught is that, you know, knowledge was meant to be shared. So my mother and my father, they created this environment where if one of us were more gifted than another in a different, in a given topic, we had to give our knowledge to each other freely, unconditionally, no strings attached whatsoever. But that also has allowed me to transfer that same mental model to the professional world where even today, I just give my knowledge away freely because I was taught that you couldn't take it with you. Mm. And so, you know, as kids, we all played together. Of course, we would get into our little, you know, scraps and fights and disagreements. But when it all mattered, we all came together. And even today, as we speak, Anthony, we like each other as adults. You know, we still like each other and we talk frequently. It's not as many of us today. I lost one sister to cancer, which is why I also love the industry that we're in because of what we do. But as a kid, you know, growing up, it was always just so much, you know, so much fun. And I grew up in the South, so I'm a Southerner by birth, and we just had just a great time together as kids.
Yeah, interesting. So you're a U.S. Army veteran, first and foremost. Thank you for your service, sir. Secondly, you know, as you reflect, what did you learn from your time in the military, and you know, how do you apply that to your professional life today? That's one question. And then the other piece of this, Mark, is, you know, when you think about it, do you have any advice for other veterans transitioning to life after the military? We hear about a lot of the stories around those who have served who, you know, sometimes struggle to get, you know, into the industry. What advice would you have for them?
Yeah, so the first part of your question, the two things that I've learned. Number one, freedom is not free. We as Americans, we pay the ultimate price for our freedom, starting with our military. And then the second thing that I learned that translates into business is that leadership is a choice, meaning we must choose to be the best leader we can be every day because those that we serve, as we did in the military and civilian life and business, you know, they depend on us. So leadership is a choice, and being the best leader you can be for others and really just model that behavior that you want others, you know, to see. And so I've actually brought that forward with me from the military, and I went to the primary leadership academy in the Army. And one of the things that taught me is that, you know, you can't lead correctly just because you have the stripes or you're in charge. You've got to win the hearts and minds of people so that they have a reason to follow you. And to the second part of your question around advice for veterans, what I find to be amazing is that there are such deep learnings and deep responsibilities that veterans have in the military. Mm-hmm. And they should not be afraid, you know, to walk very proudly into businesses, you know, and really showcasing those learnings. I mean, whether you are an infantryman, whether you are, you know, a supplyman, you have all of this knowledge where you're making major decisions every day. And so I don't know why sometimes, you know, veterans, you know, kind of clam up and they're very shy, you know, when it comes to talking to civilians as if, you know, civilians are not the enemy, but are just these, you know, these bad people. But I would say just let your light shine, you know, out proudly, articulate that you were and always will be a veteran and that you love serving. And oh, by the way, I'd love to serve you as well in any capacity possible and just showcase, you know, what your skill sets are and how you can help the company or that leader, you know, to be better.
Sure. Sure. Excellent insights. I want to go back a little bit around leadership. So, you know, every leader has his or her way, you know, style, if you will, in leading people. You touched on this a little bit, but I want to drill down a little bit more, Mark, on this is how would you describe your leadership style?
So first of all, democratic. But secondly, servant. And even before I knew servant leadership was a style, that has just always been my approach, Anthony. You know, how do I first serve others? Because one of the things I learned a long time ago is that for all the things the people that I have the privilege to serve do well, I get credit for. But I also get credit for all the things that they do that's not so well, because we all make mistakes. So once again, how do you, you know, meet them at their needs, serve them the right way, even when there are mistakes that we make? You still never, ever allow people to feel inadequate, right? And so going in it the right way and said, how can I help you? You know, how can I assist you with solving this problem? And you go from there. And then you teach people to run with bad news, right? Because if you sit on bad news, it removes the option for a leader to help. But if you run with bad news, it gives me and others optionality to help you to solve that problem. And so from a leadership style, being a servant to others and then helping them along the way. And that's the beauty, you know, of being a servant leader and then swimming alongside those that I serve, swimming ahead of them, swimming across them, but swimming alongside of those, that you serve. And that would be how I would sum up my overarching leadership style today.
So when you look ahead, what do you see for the future of digital transformation in biotech, say, in the next 5-10 years or so? If you were able to, look around the corner, what would it look like in the next decade or so?
Yeah. So the way I see it, I see instead of, number one, patients having to go to the pharmacist to pick up meds, I am, logging in on their cell phone, being authenticated, and a drone shows up on the front porch, number one, with their medicine.
Yeah.
It should be just that simple. If they want to go to the pharmacy, fine. But as long as I can authenticate them, the drone will come in at their door, ring the doorbell through the sky and drop the meds off at their door, number one. I also see, the donor, scenario working the same way. And I think just by using enabling technologies that are actually here today, we've got to get it validated and confirmed, with the FDA and with the industry that controls the airwaves, that we can do these things. And it's starting right now.
Sure.
I see transforming that way. I see clinical trials being more virtual. We're doing a little bit today, but I see that being, the standard of care, as we go forward. I also see, if you think about COVID and how it's changed some of our new normal, I do believe remote analysis of a patient's needs will become more of the norm via Teams, Zoom, and things of that nature. And since I've been sheltering in place, I've had several, meetings with my doctor and with my wife's doctor just as check-in, and with my mother-in-law, who's 89 years old, her check-ins, because once again, she's in that vulnerable state where you don't want her to be compromised. All of her checkups are mobile unless they feel a need to come in where they absolutely need to touch her. But I also think, with the iWatch and other devices, we're going to be able to, and Apple's working on this now, to be able to check vital signs and things of that nature. So I think this world of digital, it is in the neonate phase, even though some of us think that, it's very mature. It's in the neonate phase. So I think over the next 10 years, you're going to see real digital transformation, as I talked about before, that it just doesn't happen overnight. You're going to see us building upon, all of these capabilities that we put out there today. So right now, I would say that you're seeing the appetizer, right?
Sure.
The entree, if you will, has not been created yet, and the dessert has not been delivered either. So that's coming, over the next, 5 to 10 years for sure. And if you think about that, you should look at that in three horizons, right? Horizon one is taking care of the base. Horizon two would be those things that we're talking about today that tomorrow will be the standard of care. Horizon three are those things that no one's talking about yet, hasn't been thought about yet, but then the next 5 to 10 years will become the norm.
Fascinating. Well, the way you position it as far as the appetizers, the entree, I can tell you CSL has a big appetite for this,
yes.
Mark. Big time. So, before we let you go, What's maybe one or two key messages, takeaways you'd like to leave for people around digital transformation?
What I would like for the organization to do, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, as you get to know me, number one, you're never disturbing me. Number one, let me just say that. No idea is a bad idea, but submit to me problem statements. They don't need to be fully baked. Don't try and figure out the solution. Let's co-create together. So submit the problem statement of the problem that you feel, you know, we need to solve.
Sure.
Get that problem statement to myself or my team. We will work with you to, once again, co-create what I'll call possible together and be additive to it. There's a company called Pixar, Anthony.
Oh, sure.
One of the things that Pixar does very well, they will take an idea, and unless you can say something positive about a bad idea, you're not allowed to talk. Right? So, and what they do, they exhaust all the reasons why this thing can work as opposed to why it cannot work. And once they've exhausted all of that, then they can say, huh, it's not a great idea. But they actually go through all the reasons why it can work, even if it's a horrible idea at the onset, and they improve upon it. I would like for us to begin to think that way, right? As opposed to saying, well, that'll never work here. Well, how do we know?
Right.
So don't shoot the messenger. Build the messenger up, and let's see if we can exhaust the possibilities of the idea. That's what I'd like to leave with the team, and how I'd like to talk about or think about co-creating possible together for the company.
Mark, that's a great place to leave it. Thanks again for your time. We're so glad you're here at CSL. It's hard not to be excited. And again, welcome.
And thank you so much. And I'm absolutely, absolutely excited to be, you know, with the CSL Enterprise. Thank you very much.
So thanks for listening to my conversation with Mark Hill. For those of us who work in biotech, it's certainly inspiring to know that we have such leaders as Mark working on behalf of people all around the world who benefit from the promise of our work in biotech. I really appreciated Mark's insights into how digital transformation can continue to help people living with rare and serious diseases, as well as protecting public health. So thanks for listening. Stay well and stay healthy.